This podcast is brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short. You can find more podcasts and other resources on our website, www.acamh.org, and follow us on social media by searching ACAMH.
Welcome to a different type of In Conversation podcast from the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM, where we will look at the paper Prenatal Caffeine Exposure, Association with Neurodevelopmental Outcomes in 9 to 11-year-old Children, recently published in the JCPP. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology, and I have with me neuroscientist Dr. Peter Manza and Dr. Ray Chun of the Laboratory of Neuroimaging, National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland in the USA. Ray and Peter are co-authors of the paper that we'll be discussing today. If you're a fan of our In Conversation series, please subscribe on iTunes or your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with the rating or review and do share with friends and colleagues. Ray and Peter, welcome. Can you start by introducing yourselves?
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for having us. My name is Ray Zhang, and as introduced, I'm currently a postdoctoral fellow at National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. I had my training in cognitive neuroscience and clinical psychology in Germany, and the focus of my research is on substance use and sleep circadian rhythms. So we all know that caffeine is the most consumed psychostimulant worldwide and can strongly affect our sleep. So as a neuroscientist, I'm very curious to know how caffeine affects our brain. And also, I'm a coffee lover myself, so I enjoyed my morning coffee very much. That also further enhanced my research interest in studying caffeine.
Brilliant. And Peter, over to you.
Yeah, my name is Pete Manza. I'm a research fellow in the same group in NIAAA. And I did my training in cognitive neuroscience as well at Stony Brook University in New York. And my research focuses on how drugs impact the dopamine system, stimulants, how those drugs can change our brain and our behavior. I'm also completely hooked on caffeine.
As mentioned in the intro, you've authored the paper Prenatal Caffeine Exposure, Association with Neurodevelopmental Outcomes in 9 to 11-year-old Children, published in the JCPP. Can you give us a summary of the paper? What did you look at?
Sure. Maybe I start with our motivation to study prenatal caffeine exposure. So we know that the capacity of women to metabolize caffeine is markedly reduced during pregnancy. The half-life of caffeine in non-pregnant women is roughly like between 4 to 6 hours, while in pregnant women, this could be 6 to 16 hours. So we can see huge differences here. Also, the capacity of fetus to metabolize caffeine is very limited, like almost zero. So as caffeine can be passed to the fetus through the placenta, and when we think about this, it's very likely that prenatal caffeine exposure can lead to accumulation of caffeine in fetus brain. So in this study, we look at associations of prenatal caffeine exposure and with various developmental outcomes. And to understand the effect of caffeine, we are particularly interested in using neuroimaging tools to examine related brain changes in children. So until now, there are very limited neuroimaging studies on prenatal caffeine exposure. And we knew almost nothing about like how exposure to caffeine in utero affects our brain. So here we're trying to fill in some piece of information that is missing in the scientific literature.
And what methodology did you use for the research?
Here we're using a large data set from the Adolescent Brain and Cognitive Development Study. This is also called the ABCD study. And for those who may not know about it, this is the largest long-term study of brain development and child health in the US. And this is funded by the NIH. It's a very ambitious project. We're tracking over 11,000 children ages 9 to 10, and we're following up with them for over 10 years and getting measures of their biological and behavioral development. And the ABCD study is still ongoing. So it's really just at the beginning of the project. So we're using the baseline data here for those 9 to 10-year-old children. And in our study, we looked at children and excluded those who were exposed to other drugs of abuse in utero, like tobacco, alcohol, and other illicit drugs, which left us with roughly 10,000 children that we were able to study here. And we looked at prenatal caffeine exposure, which was assessed by the parents' retrospective reports. And we had various neurodevelopmental outcomes. You know, there were interviews, there were questionnaires, there were physical exams. We had different cognitive tasks to assess things like memory function, for instance. And then there were brain scans so that we could look at if there were any possible differences in brain structure between children who were and who were not exposed to caffeine in utero.
Great, sounds really comprehensive. Can you share some of the key findings from the paper?
Yeah, we found that prenatal caffeine exposure was associated with some, but not all, developmental outcomes, and also, interestingly, in a dose-dependent manner. So more into details, we found associations with greater externalizing problems, and that was even observed for the recommended safe dose, while the associations with greater BMI and greater soda consumption were only seen with high dose exposure. And in contrast, we did not find associations with birth outcomes, sleep problems, or internalizing problems, cognitive performance. And in terms of brain correlates, we see greater cortical thickness in brain posterior regions and lower cortical thickness in frontal regions. And we also see changes in circle depths, which were mainly seen in posterior regions.
As you mentioned there, prenatal caffeine exposure, including the safe dose, was associated with structural changes in the brain and greater externalizing problems. Before we explore these findings in more detail, what is the recommended safe dose? And is there a universal safe dose?
Right. In 2015, the European Food Safety Authority delivered a scientific opinion on the safety of caffeine. And they concluded that habitual caffeine consumption of up to 200 milligrams per day by pregnant women does not give rise to safety concerns for the fetus. And 200 milligrams of caffeine roughly corresponds to 2 cups of coffee. The same recommendation is made by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and they suggest the same thing, that less than 200 milligrams per day does not cause miscarriage or preterm birth. But of note, both recommendations are based on studies that just looked at pregnancy and birth outcomes. And in line with those previous studies, we didn't find any increased risk for poor birth outcomes associated with this dose of caffeine being under 200 milligrams. But we think it's important to look beyond just birth outcomes and see if prenatal caffeine exposure affects kids as they age. We think this is an important question that shouldn't be overlooked, and that was part of the motivation for this study.
Let's return to the findings. You talked about structural changes. What structural changes were seen, and can you explain to the layperson the significance of these changes?
It's important to mention that these brain changes that Ray was describing earlier, they were associated with the behavioral changes in children. So we can see a correlation between greater externalizing problems in these children and greater BMI in association with these, that's body mass index, in association with these brain structural changes. And so we're operating on the theory that prenatal caffeine exposure may be causing some brain changes in the children, so differences in the thickness of the cortex, and that this might be leading to their behavioral changes. But it's really important to note that this is cross-sectional data, meaning that we can't establish causality for sure with this data. These are correlations, and you know, this is a very large study. It's great to have a really comprehensive study in a lot of kids. That helps us to really feel solid about these associations. We think that they're a real effect here, but they, at the same time, we can't demonstrate causality for sure. So an important next step is to understand how prenatal caffeine exposure actually leads to these brain structural changes that we're seeing in a more causal way. And so we hope that by understanding this, we might be able to come up with targeted interventions to prevent these negative consequences that we think are maybe induced by prenatal caffeine exposure.
You point to a small but significant association of prenatal caffeine exposure with externalizing but not internalizing problems in children. How do you account for this association with externalizing behaviors?
That's a very important question. So let me break this question into two parts. So first, why associations with externalizing problems but not with internalizing problems? And the current findings of greater associations with externalizing problems are also in line with previous studies, both done in humans and in animals. So the short answer to this question is that we still don't know. And to make this whole picture more complex, we also see 6 differences in our study. So what we found is that boys and girls, they showed different profiles for associated externalizing problems, such that boys showed greater externalizing problems in general, while girls reported greater conduct problems specifically. And further, girls, but not boys, with prenatal cup exposure had greater somatic complaints, which is one of the internalizing problems. So this is really interesting and suggests that prenatal cup exposure might affect boys and girls through different pathways. And another relevant point that worth discussing here is that the small effect size, which is also observed in other ABCD publications as well. So in part, this might be due to the overrepresentation of high-functioning families included in the ABCD study. We know that a high-functioning family and also social environment could buffer negative consequences. And what should also be mentioned here is that the effect size of association with externalizing problems observed in the current study was comparable to previous ABCD publications on prenatal alcohol and prenatal cannabis exposures. So this is quite surprising, and also to us when we look at the results for the first time. And this really makes us rethink the importance of studies on prenatal cafe exposure, as in our society, there's greater awareness of alcohol and cannabis use during pregnancy than cafe use during pregnancy.
As you explained earlier, the study also suggests a dose-dependent association with maternal caffeine consumption during pregnancy and higher BMI during the offspring's childhood. Can you elaborate on this finding?
Correct. We found a greater BMI was only associated with high-dose exposure in our sample with children at age 9 to 11 years. So a prospective cohort study from Norway, they also show the same results when they look at children at age 8 years. However, very interesting, they demonstrated a dose by age effect. So in that study, they measured outcomes of children at different ages. And when they look at the data from earlier time points, like at age 3 and 5 years, the association with higher BMI was found even for low dose exposure. So one potential explanation could be that when children get older, such as at age 9 to 11 years in our sample, the social and environmental factors such as school attendance, peer influence, start to play a growing role in children's life, which could dampen the associations with prenatal cafe exposure. What I also want to mention is that our BMI findings is independent of children's birth weight, socioeconomic status of the family, or educational level of parents. And as I just mentioned, that the same results can be seen across different social and cultural contexts in both US and European samples. So this indicates that there might be biological pathways and through which prenatal cafe exposure can affect fat metabolism in offspring, as there's already some suggestive evidence from animal studies.
Thank you. Ray and Pete, is there anything else in the paper that you'd like to highlight?
I think what could also be interesting to our audience is that in this study, we explored mothers' characteristics associated with high cafe consumption during pregnancy. What we found is that women who are older, white, and who had higher level of psychopathology, and also who consumed tobacco and alcohol before pregnancy, appear to have more cafe intake during pregnancy. And in contrast, women with higher education and higher income, they had moderate cafe intake with weekly or less than weekly use. And also important, there was an association between early awareness of pregnancy and less cafe intake. This is consistent with previous findings showing that pregnant women tend to reduce their cafe consumption compared to pre-pregnancy, which reflects some extent of awareness of cafe intake among pregnant women.
You conclude in the paper by saying the recommended safe dose of caffeine during pregnancy should be reassessed. Is that happening? And in the interim, what advice do you have for expectant mothers? What, in your view, is a safe dose?
I think the good news is that research interest and studies in the field have been growing. And we have good hope that the guideline will be updated soon with more evidence accumulating. And to the question, what the safe dose is and whether there's a safe dose at all. So combine all the literatures in the field, as far as I can say, is that less is better. Since there's no evidence showing that prenatal cafe exposure has beneficial effect on children. However, there could be some medical concerns, especially withdrawal symptoms when stopping cafe use all of a sudden. Unfortunately, we are not able to give mothers to be a clear answer to what the safe dose is with exact numbers. As we discussed in the paper, there are some limitations in our study that restrict our conclusions. So for example, the prenatal cafe exposure was assessed by mother's retrospective report. So there might be some memory biases, but as studies keep emerging, we believe that we will have the answer to that soon.
And in the interim, if somebody is listening who is expecting, should they cut out caffeine altogether?
I would say they should consult with their doctors and really to make the informed decisions. And we also think that professionals should also be open-minded and keep up with new evidence from the emerging studies in the field so that they can also help families make more informed decisions.
Well, talking about professionals, what are the implications of your findings for them? This is for professionals working with young people and their families.
We feel strongly that both professionals and families should be informed of potential negative effects of prenatal cafe exposure on children, so that professionals can really help the families to make more informed decisions.
What message should policymakers take from the paper?
As we said earlier, we think it's important for policymakers to not only look at studies on pregnancy and birth outcomes, but we need to start taking evidence from a broader array of studies, including those that follow children up for many years and look at their developmental outcomes throughout their childhood and adolescence. For example, in our sample, 58% of mothers used caffeine during pregnancy. So we think that because of this really high prevalence of caffeine use during pregnancy, especially in this sample of about 10,000 kids, we really think it's important to reassess the guidelines, which could be relevant for public health at the population level when we're looking at these numbers.
And are you planning some follow-up research that you can share with us?
One thing we would like to follow up is to look at how prenatal cafe exposure correlates with drug use, such as alcohol and nicotine use in children when they transition into adolescence. So at baseline, because of the very low use of drugs in children at age 9 to 10 years, we were only able to examine their soda consumption, which is the main source of caffeine intake for most children. As we know that high caffeine intake itself can also raise concerns for behavioral problems in children. So it could also be important to follow up whether soda consumption or caffeine intake at baseline would increase the risk of future drug use in these children.
We have a lot of projects coming up in the future. As we said, you know, one of the most important things is to the children longitudinally over time and really understand the development from the fetus throughout childhood and adolescence. And so as the study continues on and we're able to look at these associations over time, that's going to be really, really important for determining some of these cause and effect relationships that we want to understand.
And is there anything else in the pipeline that you'd like to mention?
There are a lot of things in the pipeline, of course. I think one of the most interesting things we've been talking about is there are advances in acquisition and analysis methods for fetal MRI. So we think it's going to be really interesting when we can directly look at brain development in utero, when we can do scans on the fetus directly. And so with fetal MRI, we think that there's really quite a lot of possibility for understanding the direct impact of drugs like caffeine and how they affect the fetus.
Yeah, I would echo what Pete said. We think there are really a lot of research possibilities, especially with the advance of acquisition and analysis methods.
And finally, Ray and Pete, what are your take-home messages for those listening to our conversation?
In the current study, we provide evidence that prenatal cafe exposure could affect children's brain and behavior. So here I would like also to stress is that caffeine intake during pregnancy deserves the same amount of public awareness as other drug use, particularly when we consider the similar effect size compared to prenatal alcohol and prenatal cannabis exposure.
Yeah, the main take home from this study is that we need to be very careful in what we put into our bodies during pregnancy. And this is a clear example of something where it's worth taking another look at caffeine. Absolutely.
Thank you both ever so much. For more details on Dr. Ray Chun and Dr. Peter Manza, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on iTunes or your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.
This podcast was brought to you by the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, ACAM for short.